Hello, and welcome to Torah in Motion's MP3 audio library. We hope you enjoy this recording of a live Torah in Motion presentation. For more information, please visit www.torahinmotion.org. Thank you.
Okay. In general, what we try to do is to make the fourth shiur the one that is, let's say, the broadest amount of material could conceivably be prepared for the most. The first shiur should be a general introduction to the day, and the last shiur should be most complex. And so what we've left for the last shiur today is a general discussion of the point of Elul as a month. If my wife spoke to you about some of the things of Elul in Tanakh, so I'd like to speak about using that the broader meaning of Elul as presented by Chazal. And I think a good way to examine this is to try and appreciate the relationship between Elul and the days that come afterwards. Now, part of the confusion with this is, when you're growing up as a kid, you know what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is. Everyone knows what they are. And then, kind of like maybe when you get to high school, you hear this thing like Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Right? That there's this idea that in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you're supposed to be working. And then you get to Israel and they tell you about Elul. Or maybe like when you're a senior, it's Elul. And he's like, you're supposed to fear, you're supposed to be intense. And people are kind of like, what is that? What is Elul? Is it just more of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? And really the question is, you know, you get this Sicha, Rosh Chodesh Elul, and you have to do tshuva, and you have to, by the time Yom Kippur comes around, you're so tired of it that like you have no koach anymore to even think about it on Yom Kippur. And the problem is that people don't distinguish between the goal of each one of these days. Yom Kippur has its goal, Eshes Yemei Tshuva and Shabbos Tshuva has its goal, and Rosh Hashanah has its goal, and Elul has its goal. And the goal of what I want to talk about now is what that is in contrast to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And obviously tomorrow we'll speak about Rosh Hashanah and eventually Yom Kippur. A good way to try and examine how Elul was understood in Chazal is to look at what we do differently during Elul. Now the truth is here there's a difference between Sephardim and Ashkenaz. And if you look at the first source, the Shulchan Aruch says that the minhag in Sephardic lands was to say slichos for all of Elul. Now this is one of the moments where it pays not to be Sephardi. Again, you have that whole thing. Sephardim have a lot of kulis. But the big one is slichos all of Elul. How many of you say slichos all of Elul? That's every day, by the way. You understand what I mean? So Sephardim have that minhag, and basically according to Sephardim, Elul looks a lot like the Aseres Yemei Tshuva because you have slichos. But again, as I mentioned, Ashkenazim don't have this minhag. What do we do during Elul? So basically we do two things. The first thing that Mishnah Berurah mentions in source number 2 is that we say the Mizmor of the David Hashem Oriv Yishi. Now I heard my wife down the hallway speaking about the David Hashem Oriv Yishi, so I'm not going to elaborate. She did, right? I'm not going to elaborate that much on this Mizmor. But I will point to the two types of terms that appear here that I think are significant. Number one, it speaks about bakasha, about seeking. Okay? You see in Pasuk Dalet, Achat Sha'altim Eit Hashem Ota Avakesh, and later, very interesting Pasuk Chet, Lecha Amar Libi Bakshu Fanai, and of course, here we're reminded of the Panim idea that we spoke about earlier today, but Lecha Amar Libi Bakshu Fanai, it's a strange Pasuk. To you, my heart says, seek my face. There's a lot of you, me. And then, et panecha Hashem avakesh. What's the relationship between the different words in this pasuk? The Mizmor concludes with a theme that connects back to this key pasuk. Kaveh al Hashem chazak v'yameitz libecha v'kaveh al Hashem. We talk in the pasuk chet about lecha amar libi. And then we get back to kaveh al Hashem chazak v'yameitz libecha. Any of you may know that my nickname is Kevi. It comes from my English name, which is Kevin. You have to talk to my mother about that. You know, that was her decision. I wasn't really conscious at the time. I think it was one of those hijack names. Parents in the 60s and 70s were very worried about their kids being on a plane when it got hijacked. And for the separation process, I don't know if you guys know the history of hijackings. There were times when people hijacked planes to hold the people's hostages and not to drive them into buildings. They would hijack these planes, basically Palestinians, and then separate the Jews and the non-Jews. A lot of terrible stories. So parents were giving their kids names like, you know, Isidore, William, James, you know, and so my name is Kevin Eric. My parents kind of hoped that, you know, the parents wouldn't give it away. In any case, so that was my hijack name. And so Kevi is an abbreviation of Kevin. So when I came to Eretz Yisrael, I have an uncle who's Israeli, and he didn't know how to swallow this Kevi. So he told me, oh, Kaveh. Kaveh El Hashem. So that's what my uncle calls me. He calls me Kaveh. And, you know, I have a spin-off of his name. But, you know, in any case, this is a very important pasuk. Particularly for me, it's, you know, poignant. So we say this mizmor. And part of what we obviously need to appreciate is what the message of this mizmor is in defining Elul. The second minhag we have at the bottom of page one is, of course, to blow the shofar. We blow the shofar throughout Elul after davening. In fact, we blow the shofar right before saying this mizmor. So we'd want to know what the relationship is between blowing the shofar and this mizmor. The Rama quotes it here: "Minhag b'nei Ashkenaz einokain." Number one, einokain, not to say slichot. Ela mirosh chodesh ve'elach matchilin litkoa achar hatfilah shacharit. The Mishnah Berurah gives two explanations as to why we blow the shofar. His first explanation is that that's when Rosh Chodesh Elul is when Moshe went up to Har Sinai to get the second Luchos. The Haviru Shofar b'machaneh, and the Shofar was blown within the camp of the Jewish people, Moshe ole lahar, telling people that Moshe is going up to Har Sinai. Of course, we know this is according to the tradition of Chazal, that Moshe came down with the second Luchos on Yom Kippur. He went up 40 days before Rosh Chodesh Elul. The Shofar was used to let people know. Now the obvious question is, so what? Why do we have to commemorate the blowing of the shofar that let people know that Moshe was going up to Har Sinai? And the truth is, this is a question that's important regarding many different symbols we use to commemorate, like the shofar. The shofar is used on Rosh Hashanah to commemorate what? It's not a trick question. Akedat Yitzchak. But if you think about it, is the shofar what should be used to commemorate Akedat Yitzchak? The shofar was from the ayal that was brought afterwards. If you want to commemorate Akedat Yitzchak, we should tie the chazan down on the bima. I say we send them running to get like one of these Texo lasso things going, you know. You swing them back, you tie them up, bend over back, get out a knife. That, for me, that would remind me of Akedat Yitzchak. Horn of a ram doesn't do it for me. So that we'll talk about more when we get to Rosh Hashanah tomorrow. But the question is, why is this what we use to remember the fact that Moshe went up to Har Sinai during Elul? So that's question number one. There are Mishnah Berurah continues, and he says, "V'ika asmachta mikra," middle of the second line. There's an asmachta from the pasuk for Elul. "Ani ledodi v'dodi li," I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. Elul is the time to get a girlfriend, boyfriend, and you know, right? "Ani ledodi v'dodi li." This is strange in and of itself. Elul is about relationships, Hallmark cards. And got a little card or something. That's the Rosh HaTevos of Elul. I don't know if people know this, but the Sof Tevos of Elul combined to 40. Got all the symbolism going. You know, if the only explanation we can give is symbolism, that we're pretty desperate. How and what is Elul and the blowing of the shofar, etc.? And the Mishnah Berurah continues and he says, "Be'elu arba'im yom ha'tshuva mikubelet." Tshuva is accepted. "Liot libo karov el dodo." He's putting together the imagery that his heart should be close to his friend. B'tshuva. "V'az dodo karov lo lekabel tshuvato mi'ahava." Now here's an obvious question, because we traditionally speak about the time when tshuva is mikubelet as being when aseret yemei tshuva. Those are the last two sources on the sheet here, the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, the Rambam, who summarizes how even though tshuva is always good, so what is this, just blurring? Yom Kippur is the time of tshuva, the Aseret Yemei tshuva is the time of tshuva, Elul is the time of tshuva, Tisha B'Av is the time of tshuva, everything is tshuva, right? It could be Mashgiach City. So what's going on here? Obviously, the Elul is not Aseret Yemei tshuva. So what does the Mishnah Berurah mean when he says, "Liot karov el dodo"? So this is what I'd like to examine together with you by going back to this story that the Mishnah Berurah identifies as the source. Mishnah Berurah is based on earlier sources also of the idea of Elul, which is Moshe going up to Har Sinai to receive the second Luchos. And the reason why this story is so significant, as you see it on page 2, is because the Egel was the first communal sin of the Jewish people. It was Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. It was a good juicy sin. And how the Jewish people recovered from this sin is really a model for us for how we should deal with our own. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis says that there's a bris krusa on the Yud Gimel Midos. There's a covenant set on the Yud Gimel Midos she'einan chozos reikam, but they don't come back empty handed. If a person says the Yud Gimel Midos properly, there's a promise that the tefillah are going to be received. And that's why people focus so much on the Yud Gimel Midos, why the Yom Kippur tefillah is focused on the Yud Gimel Midos, Slichos, etc. Another interesting thing is that the Gemara beforehand, right beforehand, darshins Hashem Hashem, Anihu kodim sheyechta adam, v'anihu la'acha sheyechta adam. What does Hashem Hashem mean? So the Gemara says Hashem Hashem means that I am God, of course, initially, but I am God also afterwards. Even after a person sins, Hashem Hashem. And part of what we're going to try and explain is what exactly that means, that Hashem is Hashem even after the sinning. So what I'd like to do is study together with you the key prakim that deal with the Cheta Egel, and we mentioned them briefly earlier within the shiur I gave about the Yom Tovim in the Torah, particularly in Sefer Shemot, but now to highlight a couple of additional points to try and gain a better understanding of what exactly happened, what the significance of the Yud Gimel Midos were in this process, and how all of this can help us understand Chodesh Elul a little bit better. So if you look in Shemot Perek Chaf, the second source on page 2, you see the Aseret HaDibrot. And I think it's important to take a look at how Hashem introduces Himself to the Jewish people. The first two Dibrot are very special. In what way are you familiar with them being special? The two Dibrot are the ones that appear in front of you. In what way are you familiar with them being special? Anyone remembers? Say what? Hashem said them. Chazal Darshan. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us the Torah. Torah's Begematria 611. Right? Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe told the 611 mitzvot. There were two mitzvot that we heard directly from Hashem, which were Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yelech Elohim Achirim Al Panai. And by the way, the basis for Chazal's drasha is the fact that these psukim were obviously spoken by God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is not something Moshe would tell the Jewish people. The third dibra, though, anyone remembers the third dibra? It's not on the sheet in front of you. Lo Tishbu. Right. What does it say? It doesn't say Bishmi Lashaker. Lotisa et Shem Hashem Elokecha, as opposed to Lotisa et Shmi. That's how Chazal knew that the third Dibra was being told over by Moshe Rabbeinu. Now these first two Dibrot are basically the core of our faith. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelecha Elohim Achirim Al Panai. That's why it was Hashem who told it to the Jewish people directly. You know, two or three times a day, we accept these core principles upon ourselves. Anyone knows when we accept these principles upon ourselves? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelech Elohim Achirim Al Panai, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu is our way of accepting Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Hashem Echad is our way of accepting Lo Yelech Elohim Achirim. And of course we know that you're supposed to stress the Dalet of Echad, which we don't know how to do, to show that it's Echad Velo. That's why in the Sefer Torah, the Dalet of Echad is enlarged. Hashem Echad. Lo Yelecha Elohim Achirim Al Panai, as the contrast. Okay. These two Dibrot are also very much presented in the Torah as one unit. Because it begins, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then, Lo Yelecha Elohim Achirim, Lo Tehaseh Lecha Pesah, Lo Tishtachav Elam, Lo Teavdem Ki, middle of Pasuk Hei, Ki, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Look how the end of Pasuk Hei goes back to Pasuk Bet, and connects it and summarizes it. And the part I want to highlight for you is how Hashem defines Himself here. Lo tishtachavel hem velo teavdem, ki anochi Hashem Elokecha, listen, look, kel kana poked avon avot al banim al shileshim v'al ribeim l'sonai. What happens here in the end of Pasuk Hei? Basically, Hashem, you could say, threatens. It's not a threat here. Hashem lets them know about the fact that there are implications of sin. And people should make sure not to serve Avodah Zarah, ki Anochi Hashem Elokecha kel kana. God is a vengeful God, and if they're going to go off the path, there are going to be implications. This, of course, is exactly what happens. And it obviously is prophetic, Hashem being the ultimate prophet, and warning the people about what the implications of the sin is going to be. Of course, the Jewish people serve the ego, and we get in Perek Lamed Bet to Hashem's response. Hashem says to Moshe, Pasuk Zayin, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Lech Reid, Kishichet Amcha Asher Ha'aleitam Eretz Mitzrayim. I spoke about this earlier. You see here not just the implication of you have to leave now, but the emotional separation that God does makes for Himself from the Jewish people. Kishichet Amcha Asher Ha'aleitam Eretz Mitzrayim. And Hashem says to Moshe then in Pasuk Tes, the people are stiff-necked people, Pasuk Yud. V'yata anichali v'yichar apivayim v'achalein v'aseh otcha l'goy gadol. Let me go and destroy the Jewish people. Moshe, of course, as we know, has to step in here. Vayechal Moshe et pnei Hashem elokav. We spoke earlier about the significance of this word. Vayomer lama Hashem yechere abcha be'amecha. This is the most important word of this pasuk. Asher hutzei ta me'eretz Mitzrayim bekoach gadol v'yad chazaka. Basically, what Moshe is saying to God is, my people? They're not your people? And now Moshe proceeds to give two proofs to God that they're his people. What's the first proof? Or what's the first argument Moshe makes in Pasuk Yud Bet? You may want to walk away from these people now, but who sees you as associated with them? The Egyptians. And if you kill them now, what are the Egyptians going to say? That you intended this in a negative way in the beginning, it's going to make a chilul Hashem for you. You may want to separate yourself from them, but you can't. The people of the world see you as related. Pasuk Yud Gimel, what's the second basis for saying that the Jewish people are connected to God and God can't separate from them? Zechor, Lavram liYitzak uliYisrael avadecha. Remember the covenant, remember the relationship. Does Hashem accept the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu? Does Hashem accept the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu? Pasuk Yud Dalid, Vayinachem Hashem al ha-ra'ah. But here comes the significant part. Asher diber la'asot le'amo. God relents from his plan to destroy the Jewish people. So is everything wonderful now? Everything's dandy? Everything's great? Hashem has relented from his intention to destroy the Jewish people. But the separation is still there. In fact, keep in mind that the Jews are still worshipping the ego while this debate's going on. Moshe needs to daven on their behalf, because if Moshe doesn't get a stay of execution, he's not going to have any chance to get the people to do tshuva. Hashem agrees to give Moshe the chance. Moshe goes back down, destroys the egel. Okay. Perek lamed gimel, Hashem says to Moshe, Lech alemi ze'ata ve'ha'am asher ha'elita me'eretz Mitzrayim. I haven't destroyed them. You can go, but basically, go with your people. Goodbye. V'shalachti lefanecha malach. I'll send the malach to take care of you, but not... not me. And Moshe now in Pasuk Zayin has to take his tent and put it outside the Machaneh. Why does Moshe have to put it outside the Machaneh? And by the way, what is Moshe's tent called here in Pasuk Zayin? The Ohel Moed. What does Ohel Moed mean? Tent of meeting. In order for Moshe to meet God, to continue to meet God, his tent needs to be outside the Machaneh. Why? Because Hashem is no longer connected to this Machaneh. He'll meet with Moshe, but not with the people. But Moshe, Moshe feels this is not enough. And he says to Hashem, in Pasuk Yud Bet, you're telling me to take the people, but you're not showing me how to succeed with them. You'll get angry at them again. Pasuk Yud Gimel, if I find favor in your eyes, show me your way so I can know how to get the people to be favorable in your eyes. U're'ei ki amcha ha'goy hazeh. Recognize them as your people. And as I went through with you earlier, Hashem consents. And Moshe says, it has to be Ani ve'amecha. Ani ve'amecha, and Hashem consents. And we'll go on in a minute and see how the repair happens. But I want to show you that the backdrop to this is something that people don't always recognize in Pasuk Zayin. Going back to Pasuk Zayin, it says, U'moshe yikach et ha'ol v'natalu michutz l'machaneh harchek min ha'machaneh. V'kara lo ol moed. V'haya kol mivakesh Hashem. Anyone who sought God, Yetzei al ol moed Hashem michutz l'machaneh. Moshe can daven on behalf of the Bnei Yisrael, but the Bnei Yisrael had to show that they were seeking God, that they were not satisfied, or that they were dissatisfied with the distance that had been created. And it says in Pasuk Chet, when Moshe would go out of the tent, Yakumu kol ha'am v'nitzvu ish petach olo, everyone would stand up by the entrances to the tent, v'hibitu achrei Moshe ad bo olah, and they would watch after Moshe as he walked on. There's this longing amongst the Jewish people, which is the basis of the recreation of the covenant on page 3. If you look on page 3, Hashem tells Moshe to re-carve the luchos. And Hashem comes down, the psukim that we read when we say the Yud Gimel Midos, Fasakei, Vayered Hashem Be'anan Ve'etetzevi Mosham Vayikura B'Shem Hashem. This is Hashem doing this. Vayavor Hashem Al Panav Vayikura Hashem Hashem Kel Rachum V'chanun, etc. Moshe says to Hashem, How can the relationship with you be repaired? You're saying, take the people that you took out of Egypt. You're saying they're not your people anymore. What can we do to fix it? Hashem is reluctant. And Moshe says, no. If you want me to continue, it has to be together with these people. You have to readopt them as your people. And Hashem finally consents and he says, I will show you the way that the reparation can take place. Vayavor Hashem al panav. Hashem comes himself. Vayikrav Hashem Hashem. And now Hashem says the Yud Gimel Midos. And as people who saw God's self-description in Perek Chaf, we can appreciate how God is re-describing himself here. How did Hashem describe himself when he first introduced himself to the Jewish people in Perek Chaf, in the Aseret HaDibrot? Ki anochi Hashem Elokecha what? Kel? Kana. Pokeir avon avot al banim. Al shileshim v'al ribeim. How does Hashem recreate himself now? Vayikra Hashem, Hashem, Kel, Rachum, V'chanun. Erech apayim v'rav chesed v'emet. No tzer chesed l'alafim. He waits. No se avon v'fesha. He holds the sin and gives people a chance to correct it. Now you understand the drush of Chazal, Hashem, Hashem. They say, Hashem means before the chet and even after the chet. How does Chazal know that? Because that's the context. The context is that Moshe is saying to Hashem, be the God of these people even after they've sinned. And now Hashem says, Hashem, Hashem. I can be, I will be, not just Kel Kana, but Kel Rachum V'Chanun. Erech Hapayim, Rav Chesed. It's possible to correct. There's a patience that's built into the system. Chazal speak about there being Midat Adin and Midat HaRachamim. And we appeal to Midat HaRachamim. This is the source for that idea. Midat Adin means the way it should work. Don't serve Avodah Zarah. If you serve Avodah Zarah, you're going to be punished. That's it. Ki Anochi Hashem Elokecha Kel Kana. Moshe came to God and said, people can't live this way. And after Moshe beseeches, Hashem says, there's also Midat HaRachamim. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chanun. It's possible to appeal for a recreation, for a reforging of this relationship. And that's what happens here. And the truth is, and what we're going to talk about the rest of the time, is that tshuva as an option doesn't really make much sense that it should be an option. It makes sense to us because we are bothered by sin. We don't see it as such a terrible, abrogating thing in the first place. But if a person appreciates that sin is us walking away from a relationship with God, if sin is a spouse having an affair, should there be a possibility of tshuva? If a person, chas v'shalom, killed even one person, but for sure hundreds of people, if they actually caught bin Laden and put him on trial and he said, you know what, I made a mistake, I'm asking for the forgiveness of the court, would they forgive him? And if we understand that sin is so much more significant than that, should tshuva be a possibility? Should restoring the relationship be possible? Can a relationship where one side has had an affair be a relationship that can be restored? And the truth is, that's why the Yerushalmi in Makos, the second source on page 3, says that the notion of Chachma was asked. What should the punishments for a sinner be? And Chachma said, his sins should pursue him the rest of his life. From a Chachma perspective, if you do things that are wrong, you're going to fall, just naturally. They asked Nevuah what the punishment should be. And Nevuah said, death. Shalu l'kut shebrichu chote mahu oncho. They asked Hashem, Amr lehen yas tshuva v'yiskaper lo. He should do tshuva and they'll be kapara. It's a chiddush that only Hashem can say. Haynu d'chtiv al kein yorech hatayim b'derech, yorech l'chatayim derech laso tshuva. Hashem shows the sinners the way to do tshuva. It's a chiddush that only Hashem could make, because rationally, it doesn't make sense. And if you take a look at how the process of tshuva is meant to be done, it almost seems laughable, if you're willing to laugh at it. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah identifies changing one's name or changing one's place of residence as a way to do tshuva. The Rambam explains this last source in section Gimel. The ways of tshuva are to be crying, that makes sense, to give tzedakah, try and bribe God, simply. And to separate yourself from the things you've sinned with. And you change your name. Klomar, ani acher, I'm someone else. I'm not the one who did that. Oh, you mean it's the witness protection program? When the Sutton comes to find the old Jackie boy who did the sin, see, Jackie's been off in Israel and his name is now Yaakov. Oh, you're looking for Jack. That's not me. He did those sins. What is this? Now, part of the problem is that we don't take any of these things seriously in the first place. But if we did, do they make sense? We sinned. We changed our name. And now, we get kapara because I'm not the one who did that. All you need is to keep coming up with enough names to last your whole life. Now, there aren't many names. Eini oso ha'isha asa osan ha'ma'asim. I'm not the person who did that. What is this? How does tshuva work? And I think if we get a better understanding of what the Yud Gimel Midos are about, of how they help reforge the relationship, of what tshuva on a most basic level means, we'll be able to better understand the two-step process of Elul and then the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. And in order to do this, we're going to take a look in the bottom of page 3. The central parsha in the Torah that describes the process of tshuva is Dvarim Perek Lamed. And basically what it describes there is the process of the Jewish people returning to God when they're in exile, and God accepting this and returning to them. These two psukim, Aleph and Bet, describe the Jewish people's process of tshuva. And what's beautiful here is that the next psukim, Gimel, Dalet, and so on, describe Hashem returning to the Jewish people. If it said v'hashevote elavavecha v'shavta Hashem elokecha, here it says in pasuk Gimel v'shav Hashem elokecha et shvutcha v'richamecha. God will once again have mercy on you v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim. God's returning of the exiles to Eretz Israel is an expression of His reinstatement of them with Him as His people. How does God show that He's forgiven the Jewish people? He brings them back home. He lets them back into His home. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et shvutcha v'richamecha, etc. And it goes on to say here in Tukim Dalet and Hey, no matter how far you are on the edge of the world, God will bring you back. God will bring you back to the land where your fathers inherited. And He'll make you better and you'll have more good than your ancestors had. Or in other words, your return to Eretz Yisrael and your success there is the bona fide expression of the fact that God has accepted your back. The next pasuk is a very interesting one. The next pasuk, pasuk Vav, says, Umol Hashem Elokecha et Levavcha ve'et Levav Zarecha. God will give your heart a bris mila. How many people have I learned Daf Yomi? Hordes. Remember the Havamina a couple days ago that the bris mila should be on the heart? That's a pretty strange Havamina. People think that the way bris mila is done today is a pretty traumatic surgery. Could you imagine? Open heart surgery. Kids 8 days old. Umal Hashem Elokecha et Levavcha ve'et Levav Zarecha. If you remember the Mishnah Berurah that we saw on page 1, who brought the Rashi Tevos of Elul being Anila Dodi ve'Dodi Li, if you look at the end of that Mishnah Berurah, he concludes, V'otzmach Mikra, another basis in the Pasuk for Elul is, Umal Hashem Elokecha et Levavcha ve'et Levav Zarecha. Et Levavecha, ve'et Levav, are Rashi Tevos Elul, this Pasuk. Now this is strange because it talks about God fixing our hearts. That's strange because didn't we do tshuva in the beginning of the parak? So it seems here there are two stages. There's the tshuva you do on your own, and then there's God bringing you back and helping you reach another level. That's exactly what we're trying to identify here today, which is what are the various levels of tshuva? What's Elul? What's Yom Kippur? What's Aseret Yimei Tshuva? So we have the return of the people that leads to God returning us to Him. Let's focus in on Psukim Aleph and Bet. How many times does the word tshuva appear here in reference to what Bnei Yisrael need to do? Two, right? And that's why when it talks about God returning them to Him in Pasuk Gimel, how many times does He use the word tshuva here too? twice. What's the difference between the first one and the second one? Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Bet. What's the difference between the two times that the word tshuva appears here? I'm sorry? I say, don't be embarrassed. You? The binyanim. V'hashevota. To cause to return. Versus v'shafta, which means to actually return. And I think the difference in binyanim is because the difference in context. The first one, Pasuk Aleph, is that doing tshuva to God? V'hashevota el levavecha. The second step is v'shafta an Hashem lokecha. The second step is that you return to God. But before you can return to God, you need to do what? You need to cause a return to yourself. V'hashevota el levavecha. And the truth is that this idea continues through the end of the perek. Because at the end of the perek here, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Ki ha-mitzvah hazot. And the Ramban on the bottom of the page explains that mitzvah hazot, because it's singular, is referring to the mitzvah of tshuva just mentioned here. That's why the Ramban counts it as a mitzvah. Lo nifleiti mimcha v'lo rechokai. It's not above you or far from you. Lo b'shamayim, lo me'ever layam. It's not in the sky, it's not in a distant island. Ki karov eilecha davar ma'od. The thing is very close to you. Where is it? B'fichau b'levavcha la'asoto. It's in your mouth and heart. As we said in the beginning of the perek, tshuva does not begin with returning to God. It can't begin with returning to God in order for it to be real, in order for it to be meaningful. It begins v'hashevota el levavecha. If you look at page 4, the Gemara in Erevin has a very interesting reading of this pasuk. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Mehacha, Ki karov eilecha hadavar ma'od b'ficha u'bilvavcha la'asoto. He reads the pasuk this way. Eimatai karov eilecha. When is tshuva really close to you? Bizman shebeficha u'bilvavcha la'asoto. When you recognize that it's in your mouth and heart. It is karov eilecha when you choose to do it this way. This is the launching point for the Sefer Tanya of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says his goal is to explain how tshuva can be close through the heart. And this is the point that needs to be explained. Ultimately, tshuva is returning to God. But that return has to be rooted in and preceded by a return to one's own heart. What does that mean? I think we can understand this based on the Gemara in Brachot, third source, right in the middle of the page, third source in the bottom, that talks about the difference between a tzaddik, a rasha, and a benoni. Now this is always an interesting thing, because Rosh Hashanah, the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, Yom Kippur, be difficult times only for the benonis, right? Because the tzaddiks are immediately signed off. Yet when you go to shul, the people who seem to be taking it most seriously, the people who seem to be most worried, are dafka the people you think would be tzaddikin. You go to a communal shul. You go to a yeshiva. The Rosh Hashiva is wailing. The tzaddik is wailing. And Yeshivat HaKol, where Rav Nevin saw there. He's crying his heart out. Now, I don't really understand this, because the man walks through the street holding a gemara. I want to know what he does when he gets home. And it's not even like, what does he have to do tshuva for? If he's not a tzaddik, who is a tzaddik? Well, he comes late to minyan once in a blue moon, 2 minutes late. He's not a tzaddik? He doesn't have enough schuyot on his side? The reason why is because of the Gemara in Brachot. The Gemara says, "If Yosi Aglili Omer, Tzadikim Yetzer Tov Shoftam. Tzadikim are ruled by their Yetzer Tov. Rishayim, Yetzer Ra Shoftam. Rishayim are completely ruled by their Yetzer Ra." This is not what we're used to thinking, that it's counting up the number of mitzvot and averot and seeing the register in the end. Beinonim Zevezeh Shoftam. Beinonim are controlled by both. Amar Rava, middle of the last line of the source, Kigon Anu Beinonim, like we are Beinonim. This is Rava. Amar Le'abaye, Lo Shavik Mar Chaya L'chol Beria. You haven't left any room for anyone else, because if you're a Beinoni, then we're all in big trouble. The Baal HaTanya asks in the next source, how could Rava have thought he was a Beinoni? The Gemara tells us Rava learned all day. He never stopped learning. When he had to die, the Malach HaMavis couldn't get him because he wasn't stopping. He really thought he was a Beinoni. So the Baal HaTanya explains a point that I think is definitely so. It happens to be the one to explain it. Tzaddik Rasha, Beinoni are not about the number of points you've added up. They're about the identity of who you are. There are some people who are thoroughly, completely, absolutely tzaddikim. And that means they are controlled 100% by the motivations of tzidkus and avodat Hashem. That's the only thing that goes on with inside. That's a tzaddik. Then there are people who are 100% controlled by evil. Like the people in the comic strips. The Penguin. The Joker. Okay, they're just internally evil. Then there's the rest of us. The rest of us are controlled by competing forces. The rest of us have part of us that draws us to good and part of us that draws us to bad. Who are we? Are we good or bad? What we don't understand is that what life is about is not whether you did this action or that action. Those things are important, of course, because what actions you do are expressions of who you are. But the real question is who you are. And that's a difficult question. Because we do contrary things. Because we're motivated by different things. Because one day we jump out of bed, that's pretty rare, but to come to Minyan, and other days we don't. So who is the real one? Some days we're passionate about chesed, and some way we look the other way. Who are we for real? Real tshuva begins with looking inward in an attempt to define who we are. To what extent we are truly devoted to Avodat Hashem. That's tshuva. Returning to God before someone has returned to their own heart. Returning to God, in quote, before someone's taken stock and decided who they are as an individual is fake. Just as much of the way we live our lives is. In order to do Vishavta Hashem Elokecha, and whatever that entails, and fix our ways, etc., we have to begin with Vashevota Elevavecha. Taking stock on the inside. Seeing and determining who we are for real. And maybe changing who we are for real. The Ramban in the last source on the page explains that Umal Hashem et Levavecha means that Hashem will take off of our heart the layer, the level, the aspect that draws us to bad. The Ramban says, we're all torn. We have a Yetzer Hara, we have a Yetzer HaTov. We cannot get rid of our Yetzer Hara. We can't. That Hashem needs to do for us. But we can decide that we don't want to be functioning based on it. We can decide that we don't want it. Hashem will not take away that impulse or impulses we have till we decide we don't want those impulses. Till we decide we want to go a different way. Our tshuva is to recognize what's going on the inside, not on the outside. To recognize that the real issues are not about whether we wear this clothing for davening or whether the real issues are what we are about or not about. To do that reconciliation and to return to God and to ask God to return us to Him and help us become better people, more refined, more motivated by His will and less by the layers of the lave that He needs to remove. Umal Hashem Elokecha Levavecha. If you look back at the psukim that we saw on the bottom of page 3, these are the steps of tshuva. Returning back inwardly in taking stock and deciding who the real me is. After that, b'shavta Hashem Elokecha, then Hashem will ultimately do this brit milah and help us become the people we've decided to be. And I think that this first step of tshuva is what Elul is about. The Rambam on a sheet that seems to have gotten cut off here, very famous Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalet, the Rambam says that the purpose of the shofar is to wake people up. And the Rambam says that people just get used to. They get used to the norms of life. They get used to what, the way we live with these internal contradictions. We get so used to them that we no longer challenge them. And many of you, I'm sure, look around at people in the communities, older people, and say, they're full of contradictions, it's hypocritical. But many people this age eventually become that way at that age because we stop challenging the hypocrisies. We stop decrying them. Tshuva is about revisiting these things and seeing the things that are hypocritical, that are wrong, that are not in the right direction. The shofar, says the Rambam, is to cause us to wake up. Zichru barachem. Remember your Creator. Elulzman is not about changing. Elulzman is about waking up. We blow the shofar after davening, and that shofar was the shofar that announced that Moshe was going up to the mountain. Why is that significant? Because the people needed to know he was going up. Because Moshe could not repair the relationship if the people hadn't done v'hashivot elavavach. Moshe couldn't stand there on the mountain for 40 days if the people down there were watching ESPN. The people at the bottom of the mountain had to be doing v'hashivot elavavach. Every day that Moshe stood on the mountain, the shofar was blown. Moshe's up on the mountain. And what am I doing as a basis for that reparation? What we do after davening is we blow the shofar. And then we read the Mizmor as L'David Hashem or Rivi Yishi. And let's go back to that Mizmor now. The Mizmor is about our seeking the direction of God. Pasuk Chet is the key pasuk. Lecha amar libi, which is explained as regarding you. Lecha amar libi, my heart said, Bakshu fanai. What does Bakshu fanai mean? Seek my face. What does seek my face mean? A direction. Seek the personal relationship with God as the direction that you want to go in. And now the response comes in the end of pasuk Chet. Et panecha Hashem avakesh. My heart calls me to seek you. The shofar calls me to arise, to wake up. And we answer, Et panecha Hashem avakesh. And now, afraid that we might lose the relationship, we say to God, Al taster panecha mimeni. Don't hide from me. Please be there for me when I seek you. When my heart seeks you. Kaveh al Hashem chazak v'yameitz libecha v'kaveh al Hashem. The David Hashem ori v'yashi is the mizmar that's supposed to tell us what the shofar is calling upon us to do, and the mizmor that contains within it what our response is supposed to be. The David Hashem Ori V'Yishi is defining what thought process is supposed to go on in wake of the blowing of the shofar during Elul, which is different than Rosh Hashanah. And we'll see tomorrow what Rosh Hashanah is. Same horn, different blowing, that's why Erev Hashanah we don't blow the shofar, to separate. Elul is not about changing. Seriously, Tshuva is, Elul is about finding a direction. Elul is about deciding whether we want the personal relationship with God. Elul is about returning to one's heart to see if they're functioning that way. To recognize whatever hypocrisies and contradictions and mutual loyalties we have. To do open heart surgery in a true, genuine way. To recognize the internal conflicts and falsities we have within us. There's a lot to talk about that, which we're not going to do right now. It's v'hashivot elavavecha, which can allow us to do the second level of tshuva, which is v'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha. I say, "Me tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur." That's lefnei Hashem. That's cleansing. That's fixing. Elul is about bakshu fanai. It's about a call to face God. It's about a shofar that awakens. And it's about a decision in direction. Elul is not doing tshuva, but facing tshuva. Determining the direction we face, both outwardly and more important, inwardly. Determining who we are, and more importantly, who we'd like to be. And hopefully this morning, the shiurim we've spoken about Elul have given you a better appreciation for a phenomenon that's amorphic and very much misunderstood, or not understood at all, is probably more correct, about what this month that comes before Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippurim, and the Aseret Yimei Tshuva is about. Tomorrow, we'll begin with Rosh Hashanah, and then on Friday with Yom Kippur.